OMG, it's another episode of True Scary Stories with Edie. I'm joined by Nick Guerra.
Hey.
First and foremost, we want to thank everybody who went to iTunes and rated the podcast. We really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please go to iTunes and give us 5 stars. And I'd like to read some awesome reviews. Mel says, I've recently gotten into listening to paranormal podcasts on my drive home from work, and I keep getting bored within 5 minutes of each podcast. This one was different. I'm not going to lie. My first impression wasn't, oh, this is a great podcast. It was more like, okay, a little cheesy and try hard with the commentary, but I couldn't turn it off like the other podcasts that I could. Something was different with this. Something made me want to continue and listen. After the first episode, I was hooked and wanting more. I loved the commentary and found myself cracking up at some of the jokes. I like how she said some. First impressions can be wrong, and mine was so wrong. It failed me. I look forward to each new episode, chomping at the bit to get the chance to listen. I definitely tell everyone that I can about this podcast. It's amazing. Thank you so much, Mel. We really, 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 really appreciate that.
Yes.
And then Andre also gave us 5 stars and said, this is hilarious, and Nick, Edie is hilarious, and Nick keeps the show on track. Perfect combination of fun and scary. Well, we really appreciate that, you guys. And if you haven't, go ahead and go to iTunes and give us 5 stars. It really helps us out.
And to any new listeners, remember, this is Scary Stories with commentary from comedians.
Yeah.
That's why there's the funny commentary.
Okay, good. Good. All right. So, what are we drinking today?
I'm drinking Heavyweights. Cab. It's called Heavyweight. 2014.
You enjoying it?
Yeah, I think I like it. Second time I've bought it, so. Bought it.
Oh, take God. All right. Are you ready to get into this?
Let's do this.
All right, what's our first story is a listener story, right?
No, it's not.
Okay, well, then it's not. Remember that you can submit your stories, and we will definitely read them on the podcast. The first story is about Lydia. You ready to get into it?
Yes.
Okay. And this first story is Lydia.
This story is thought to be of an urban legend in North Carolina. On certain rainy nights, where US 78 twists around a sweeping curve that passes by an old, overground underpass, drivers will see a young woman in a white evening dress standing by the side of the road. She will desperately be trying to flag down any passing car. If anyone pulls over to help the young lady, she climbs meekly into the back seat of the car and says that her name is Lydia. She will tell the driver that she's just been to a dance and now she's just trying to get home. She gives the driver an address not too far away. One notable sighting involved a motorist named Burke Hardison. He was driving near the underpass one night when he saw a woman in a white evening gown signaling for help. Hardison picked her up and the frantic woman said she needed to get home to High Point since her mother would be worried. She provided her address, but when Hardison arrived at the house, the girl completely vanished. Nonetheless, Hardison decided to go knock on the door. A woman answered. After hearing Hardison's story, she told him, Lydia was my daughter. She died in a car wreck by that overpass in 1923. You're not the first one, and I suppose you won't be the last. Every so often, her spirit flags down a passing driver. I suppose she still doesn't understand what happened to her. I suppose she's still trying to get home. The story goes that on a rainy night in 1923, a woman named Lydia traveled to Raleigh to attend a dance with her boyfriend. The couple was driving to High Point on Highway 70 when they collided with another car at a narrow underpass. Lydia was killed instantly and happened to be wearing a white evening gown that night. While the story sounds like a folktale, researchers have uncovered a death certificate of a 19-year-old High Point girl named Lydia, who died in a car accident on December 31st, 1923. That's why the overgrown underpass near Jamestown is called Lydia's Bridge. Drive past it on a rainy night, and you might see Lydia too.
Really creepy. And also sad that her mom has to keep being confronted with that, just reminding her, you know, that...
Yeah.
That her daughter still hasn't found rest.
I'm sure the mom's dead by now,
Good, that's comforting.
So, because Lydia was 19 in 1923, so the mom's a little bit older.
Well, good. As long as she's dead, then I feel great.
Which would be even worse for the people if they arrive at the house. And, oh, that's my daughter. She's been dead, whatever, whatever. And then he tells the story. Oh, that old lady's been dead for 50 years.
Okay, good. I think that's a great start. We're off to a real creepy start. Hopefully this time we get as scared as we did last time.
Yeah. Oh, there's a few.
We should turn... Well, you know what? We're going to turn off the lights. We're going to get really spookified.
Okay.
Okay, we've set the spooky mood. This next story is called Never Pick Up a Hitchhiker.
So this was told to me by an old family friend, Nikki, numerous times as a kid growing up, as one of those life advice stories to keep in mind through the years. And to her credit, I've never forgotten it. Whenever anything associated with hitchhiking comes up, it always springs to mind, and probably always will. Makes me a little bit ill whenever I think about it, actually. So Nikki, who grew up around the same time as my dad around the early 80s, was a young woman in her mid-20s. She was one of those real kind-hearted souls, always willing to help out anyone in a time of need. And I can imagine her being anything other than that when she was younger. So I totally see her doing this too. So driving into the city, about a 2-hour or so drive out of town, she saw a man walking down the side of the road. As she neared, he turned and in typical hitchhiker manner stuck out the old arm and thumb. Nikki, bless her heart, pulled over and asked him if he needed any help. She told me that he was really polite, if not a bit shy. When he asked for a lift into the city, Nikki gave a smile that popped upon the passenger door for the guy. Oh, and popped open the passenger door for the guy, who tossed his bag into the back seat and buckled up for the rest of the ride. They talked pleasantly for most of the trip about friends, the news, etc. She felt that they were getting on really well and even bought him dinner at the pit stop a little over halfway there. She says he seemed really flustered and awkward when she paid, but one of the things they had talked about was money and how he was pretty dang strapped for cash, which is why he was hitchhiking in the first place. But he eventually relented and they went on their way. As soon as they got into the city, he thanked her profusely for the ride and the food and asked to be dropped off once they hit downtown. Before getting out, he asked for Nikki's home phone number so he could contact her someday and catch up. Thrilled at the prospect of knowing how her new friend was faring, Nikki wrote it down for him and drove off with a warm feeling of a good deed done. Now, I'm sorry if you were expecting something creepy to have happened by now, but I think this is what freaked me out as much as a kid. How nice everything seemed to have worked out. Nikki would get this crease in her forehead and a funny look in her eye when she would tell me the next part. A week later, she got a phone call from her driving buddy. He didn't let her get a word in edgewise after hello and told her that she should thank God that she was raised so nice, because when he first got in her car, he was planning on raping and murdering her once they got to that pit stop.
Oh my God.
That he was going to steal the car and dump her body in a ditch further down the road and go on his merry way. But after she talked with him so kindly and treated him to dinner with a smile on her face, he couldn't bring himself to do it. He didn't think that he could live with himself after doing that to such a nice lady. And to please, please, Nikki, please, never, ever pick up another hitchhiker. Then he hung up the phone. Nikki never got a call from him again, and when she tried redialing the number, she got a payphone. And so, Mr. Hitchhiker, I know I'm never going to meet you, because I'm going to listen to the advice you gave your driving buddy and never, ever pick up a hitchhiker.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
That is too much. Yeah, because I was like, why would she give him her phone number? Like, I'd be like, yeah, I gave you a ride. I don't really need to give you my phone number. But she's just so friendly.
Yeah.
Which inevitably saved her life. But also, she would have never picked up the hitchhiker had she not been friendly.
She had not been friendly.
So she put herself in danger by being friendly.
Yeah.
But wow, what a creepy thing to do. And then she dialed the number back.
Yeah.
Why'd she want to talk to that guy more?
Because she's a nice person.
She's too nice.
She's too nice. Oh, do you still want another chance?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ruin your plans for the evening. And this next story is called He Enjoyed the Drive.
First of all, I want to apologize for any mistakes. English isn't my first language, and even though I'll try my best to avoid it, I'll probably mess up something. The story took place 2 years ago. I was on my second week backpacking through Austria, and I reached a point where I was too exhausted to walk any longer. It was an unusually hot day. I had blisters all over my feet, and I was ready to call it quits. I was in the middle of nowhere and decided to thumb a lift to the nearest train station. But I was out of luck. I stood there for what felt like hours, and no car would pick me up. I don't blame them. I spent 2 weeks sleeping in the woods. My clothes were dirty, and I probably looked like a maniac. When finally a truck pulled up, I didn't hesitate to hop inside because I was so thankful to be able to sit down and rest my feet for a while. I asked the driver if he could drop me off at the nearest station so I could catch a train to Vienna. But he told me that he was heading back there anyway, and he could take me there as long as I don't mind him making a stopover to load the truck. I didn't, so we drove along. We made some small talk, and he seemed to be very polite. It was a pretty enjoyable ride until we reached the first stop. He loaded his truck while I walked around a bit and bought some water at a gas station nearby. He had offered me drinks a few times along the ride, but I always declined because I don't feel comfortable with that. I got back into the truck, and we continued to drive to Vienna. Almost immediately after we took off again, he told me that it wouldn't be a problem for him if I wanted to take off some clothes since it was such a hot day. I told him that was fine, but he brought it up again and a couple of more times after that. He also asked me if I wanted to take a nap in the back and that he had several hitchhikers sleeping there in the past. I declined again and started to feel a little uneasy around him and planned to leave the truck at the next gas stop. All of a sudden, he nearly yelled at me to put my head down and hide because he was driving past his stepfather's car and he didn't want him to see me in the truck. That struck me as odd. But I did anyway because his yelling took me by surprise. That confirmed my resolution to get out of there as soon as possible, and I asked him to drop me off at the next stop. Made up an excuse that it was my goal to enter Vienna by foot and that I was rested enough to make it, thanks for the lift. He agreed and I got my stuff ready. He suddenly turned to me and said that I looked familiar, and that he was sure he saw me somewhere before. I shrugged it off, but he insisted he remembered my face. He asked me if I ever went to a swingers club, because he was sure he saw me there sometime. That caught me off guard, and I told him that this was impossible because I'd never been to one. Well, do you want to? I'm going to one in Vienna. Let's go to there together. I'm sure you'll like it. At this point, I really wanted to get off the truck ASAP, and I told him I had no intention to come with him and asked him to drop me off now. He didn't answer, but reached into his pants and started masturbating while he drove along. I froze up, clutching my backpack on my lap, and didn't know what he was doing there since he didn't respond to my plea to let me out. A gas station was coming up, and he stopped what he was doing and asked if we should take a shower together. I figured that there'd be people around and that it would make it easier to get rid of him, so I told him, sure, why not? He pulled up, and as soon as he stopped, I yanked open the door and ran across the parking lot of the gas station, hoping that he wouldn't come after me. He didn't, so I just kept running until the station was out of sight and I reached a busy street. Only after my heart stopped racing, I caught my breath and realized I left my shoes at the truck. I walked the last few kilometers barefoot and kept a lookout for that truck until I reached Vienna.
Wow. This guy was just masturbating. Obviously, this guy's not into it. They pull up and he's like, oh yeah, do you want to take a shower together? This guy has no clue.
Maybe that'll convince you.
I mean, showers are so enjoyable. I know you...
With two people.
You haven't been into anything I've been doing thus far.
A gas station shower at that.
Maybe he's just like, why not? I'm just going to throw this in there. I'm already striking out.
If you're already jacking off, you might as well go
the distance.
Jacking off.
That's the episode question. Bum, 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 bum. Is it jacking off or jerking off? Jacking off seems like you were, like, using your wiener to, like, break up concrete or something.
Yeah.
Like a jackhammer.
And what does jerking sound like?
You're just, like, doing it fast, like, bop, 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 bop.
All right. I got you.
I'm pretty sure it's jerking off. He was jerking
off. To each his own.
Do you want to take a shower together? Listen, I know this conversation's not going that great, but do you want to take a shower together? This next story is a real trip. This one's called No Handle.
In the late 70s, my uncle was studying medicine at the University of Chicago. After a morning class, he decided that he would hitchhike back home to Lincoln Park on the north side instead of pay for a taxi. A man drove up in a Plymouth Satellite and offered my uncle a ride. The man looked normal and seemed friendly, lighthearted even. So my uncle got in the car and they started driving toward Lakeshore Drive. However, once they got there, the man drove south on Lakeshore instead of north, towards Lincoln Park. My uncle told the man that he was going the wrong way and to turn around and head north. The man looked at my uncle, put his hand on his knee and said, "No, son, you're coming with me," and smiled darkly at him. My uncle froze in panic, and when they hit traffic near the South Shore, he quickly unlocked the passenger's door and ran away without looking back. A year or two later, on a cold December day, my uncle was having coffee in a cafe with my future aunt when he caught something on TV that made his blood run cold. He saw the man that had picked him up from school that day the year before. He had been arrested for the suspected rape and killing of over 20 young men and boys. The man on the television was John Wayne Gacy, and he had removed the door handle off the passenger side of the door to prevent the men he picked up from escaping.
Wow. That's so crazy. When they said that they were going to Lincoln Park, in my head I was like, I've become so numb, I can't feel you there. We were heading to, I'm tired of being what you want me to be.
Yeah. Oh, I spilled wine on my red shirt.
Oh, well, that actually works out perfectly.
Yeah.
Are you ready for the next freakadika story?
Mm-hmm.
And this next story is called Carl Eater.
In November 1958, Thomas Prendergast from El Cajon, California, picked up Carl Alfred Eater, a 16-year-old runaway hitchhiker from New York. Eater was homeless, and Prendergast felt sorry for him, so he decided to let Eater stay with him and his family until Eater got back on his feet. However, Prendergast would come to regret that decision after leaving for work on December 12th. When Prendergast returned home, Eater was already standing outside the house and asked for a ride to San Diego. Prendergast complied and dropped Eater off at a service station. Prendergast then went back home again and made a horrifying discovery. His wife, Lois, was shot to death. The couple's four children, 9-year-old David, 6-year-old Thomas Jr., 4-year-old Diane, and 2-year-old Alan, had been murdered with a hunting axe. Eater was captured 2 days later and claimed he had snapped and thrown Diane to the floor because she was making too much noise. As Mrs. Prendergast tended to her injured daughter, Eater shot her before murdering Diane and Alan too. When David and Thomas Jr. returned home from school, Eater killed them too. He was subsequently given 2 life sentences. In October 1974, Eater managed to escape from the prison and has never been recaptured. He left behind a note which read, "I've done enough time and I'm leaving." In subsequent years, Eater has been seen hanging out with motorcycle gangs and radical left-wing anti-government groups, and it's speculated that one of these groups might have murdered him. However, if he is still alive, Carl Alfred Eater would be 73 years old today. There's a $20,000 reward for his capture.
Let's get on it.
All right, let's do it, guys.
Let's head out there to El Cajon, California. Oh, that's in California. We could actually really do that.
Okay.
Do you think that he's still alive and so is the ghost of that mother? And maybe they found happiness together.
They found love.
Oh. They found love. Okay, you ready for the next story?
Yes, the next one is a story.
Is it a big, scary one?
It's pretty scary, actually.
I'm ready. This next story is called Futures.
I was driving through rural New Jersey when I saw him. A hitchhiker standing by the side of the road. Surprisingly well-dressed, black suit, slicked back hair, narrow briefcase. Now, I know I shouldn't pick up hitchhikers, but I'm 6'4", 230 pounds, with all kinds of hunting equipment in the back of my truck. It's not like this prissy-ass businessman is going to beat me to death and leave me on the side of the road. Besides, I need gas money. "Hey man," I said, pulling over to the side of the road. "I'll give you a lift if you pay me for gas." "Of course," he said in a polite, almost British accent. He reached for his wallet and pulled out three crisp $20 bills. "This enough?" I grinned. "That's way more than enough." I greedily snatched the money from him and clicked the locks. "Get in, bud." He climbed in. His blue eyes shifted from the crumpled Wendy's wrapper on the dashboard to the mysterious sticky goo on the middle console. "Sorry, the car's not clean. I'm going hunting," I said, turning back onto the highway. "Hunting? Interesting," he said in a strangely enthusiastic tone. "Have you always liked to hunt?" "No, it's the funniest thing. Never thought I'd ever hunt. Love animals. Got three dogs at home. But there are so many deer around these parts. When the winter comes, a lot of them starve to death. Not to mention all the car accidents they caused." I trailed off and we fell into an uncomfortable silence. "Just hunting for the day then?" "No, my buddy Matt and I will be out there the whole weekend." He let out a laugh. "The whole weekend? Your wife's a saint for letting you go." "My wife? How did he..." But then my eyes fell on the steering wheel and the silver ring on my finger. "Ah yeah, Mary's a doll. She's actually pregnant, you know, 5 months with a little girl." He gave me a crooked smile. "A girl, huh?" "Yeah." I could feel him staring at me long after we had fallen into silence. It made me feel uncomfortable. I clicked on the radio. "How'd you meet Matt?" he asked, fiddling with the dial. All that came through was static. "That's a weird question," I thought. He and Mary were close friends, so when we got married, I got to know him well." "Mm-hmm," the man said. He stroked his chin thoughtfully, and I was suddenly reminded of a psychiatrist. "Are you a psychiatrist?" I blurted out. He laughed. "Definitely not. I work in finance." "What type of finance?" It was my turn to ask the questions now. "Futures," he replied noncommittally. I glanced over at him. A small smile was on his lips, and I noticed his fingers had gravitated from his lap to the briefcase at his feet. My heart began to pound. Click, click, he undid the clasps. The case creaked open. "What's in your briefcase?" I asked. "Work." "What kind of?" His long fingers disappeared into the darkness of the case. He was pulling something out. My body began to seize up. The steering wheel felt like ice under my fingers. "I have a lot of hunting equipment back there," I said, "so you better not be a..." I stopped. He was only pulling out a sheet of paper. For a few minutes, he was quiet, reading the paper intently and silently, as if his life depended on it. Scratch, scratch, his finger slid over it as they traced the text. Then he slipped it back into the case and snapped it shut. What was he reading, I thought. But before I could get the question out, he turned towards me. I could barely see his face in my peripheral vision, but I knew he was staring at me, for minutes on end. Then he broke the silence. "Don't go hunting," he said, his ice blue eyes boring into me. "What?" "Turn the car around. Go home to Mary." "What?" "She needs you," he paused. "Madeline needs you." I paled. I never told him we were going to name our baby Madeline. "How did you..." "He's going to make it look like an accident," he said, his voice gravely and halting. "Just a simple hunting accident. The most punishment he'll endure is 35 minutes in the police station writing out his statement. But let me off at that diner up ahead. I like their Cobb salad very much." "Matt's going to kill me? What are you talking about?" He turned to me, eyes wide. "What are you talking about?" "About what you just said. All I said is I'd like to let me off at the diner, please." He pointed to the exit, curving off the highway. "You're going to miss it if you don't slow down." With a shaking hand, I clicked on my blinker, pulled off the exit and into the parking lot. My heart pounded in time with the click, click, clicks of the cooling engine. "Thank you for the ride," he said, pulling his briefcase out with him. "Have a good drive, will ya?" I couldn't squeak out a reply before the door slammed shut. I didn't believe him. But my nerves were too shot to continue the trip either. I texted Matt that I was sick, turned around, and went home to Mary. Mary was thrilled. Matt was disappointed. A little too disappointed, if you ask me. A month later, after ignoring most of Matt's calls and texts, which became increasingly frequent and desperate, I heard a faint thumping noise at the door. When I flicked on the porch light, there was Matt, hunched over our doorknob, holding a lockpick. We called the police. Since then, life has been great. Just a few months later, our wonderful little Madeline was born. And as soon as we got back from the hospital, on our doorstep was a little teddy bear, a pink bow sewed on its head. There wasn't a return address or a card of any kind. but I think I know who it's from.
Move! You gotta move. You gotta go somewhere else. And I'm surprised he's still named the daughter Madeline. I would've changed the name.
Yeah?
Yeah, that creepy guy knows it. You gotta have a whole new kid. That guy knew about it. So was he psychic or was he a stalker?
Well, he said he never mentioned Madeline. I don't know.
Because he could have just been stalking him this whole time and that's how he knew. That's... Oh, but they said they didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So he had to be like psychic. But that might have been what he was reading from the paper. Yeah. He had been spying on them, listening to their conversations. And maybe he was pulled that out and was reading it from the paper.
Yeah.
Some information.
Maybe, yeah, because he said he didn't tell me, or I didn't tell him, my kid's name.
That's a really far stretch, though, to just go out hitchhiking, hoping
that you get in the right car.
That this guy picks you up. That he wants to pick up somebody. Because he could just easily just drive by with no...
Yeah.
Being like, oh, I don't want to pick up a hitchhiker, and then you just wasted your whole night.
Yeah. Well, if you're a stalker, you don't mind wasting nights. Well, and if you're a psychic, well, you saw
you know. Maybe he is a psychic. It'd be really sad if that bear was from just, like, one of their friends. Like, wow, they never said thank you for the bear. Just the card blew away. And this next story is called Knock Knock. I hope it's something like tap, tap, and tap, 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 tap.
Last week, I had just left Gallup, New Mexico, and was driving west on I-40 near Holbrook, Arizona, when I heard a knock, knock, knock two times on the side of my sleeper. So, knock, knock. It was very loud and distinct, like 1, 2, 3. And then it repeated once more shortly after that. I had the radio off and was alone in the rig. Honestly, I thought keep driving was the best thing to do. When I got to Holbrook, I stopped for the break, but was too freaked to get out and go look. The next day, I walked around the cab and was looking at the catwalk. There was no way a human being could have been hiding back there at 3 a.m. in 10-degree freezing winter weather going 70 miles an hour without anyone noticing. I logged this one as unexplained.
There was definitely a Mothman or a demon on the back of it.
It's probably a skinwalker. Gallup, New Mexico, that's kind of where the skinwalker happens.
Oh, no! Skinwalkers.
And we already know they like knocking on windows, too.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, this is Gallup, New Mexico. This is all happening around that area.
Yeah, right. And skinwalkers can definitely be in the cult.
Yeah.
They don't care.
They don't care.
If you didn't hear the last episode, which was skinwalkers, they're really freaky, ruthless demons that Native American people
believe
are always dodging, apparently.
Yeah.
And yeah, that definitely sounds like that kind of... It sounds like something that if he would have gone back there, he would have found out what it was.
Yep.
Because there's been things like that, like that story about the Hawaiian people who... There was something tapping on their car, and when the guy got out, he went to go get... help because their car had broken down, and then the girl had heard the tapping again, and then she had found out it was like her boyfriend hanging from the tree or something like that.
They
had, something had killed him. Yeah.
Roof. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like anytime you hear tapping in your car, that's not good. Definitely some kind of demon.
Go to Firestone.
Definitely a demon. Demon skinwalker. The devil himself. That's really scary. And we are down to our last story. And before we go, just a reminder that to join the Facebook group, True Scary Stories with Edie, where you can find out when we're going to post new episodes. We post scary stuff, and you can read people's real-life scary stories on there. And don't forget to give us 5 stars on iTunes. Nick, are you ready for the last story?
Yes.
This one's called A Child Cries.
I was driving at night when I heard an odd grinding noise, like I had run over something that got stuck. It was about 2 a.m., so I pulled into a well-lit rest stop and woke up my buddy. I explained it to him, and as we got out of the car, we heard what sounded like a kid crying. There were no other cars at the rest stop, but we frequently heard stories about child trafficking and kidnapping, so we decided to check it out. We grabbed our flashlights and headed towards the noise, which was coming from the bathrooms. As we got closer, we realized that it was coming from the woman's bathroom, It was a low, dull sobbing. We prepared for the worst and walked in expecting to see a brutally beaten or raped 8-year-old, something like that. But there was nobody inside. The sound was still there. It was still clearly coming from the room, but the room was empty. We turned on the lights, but still found nothing. We checked each stall, the trash can, nothing. We even started looking for where in the room it was coming from. Nothing. We wondered, is it a hidden speaker? Are we on candid camera? What the fuck? My buddy climbed up one of the stalls to get to the top window in the rest stop, which was vented out and open. He closed it, and the noise stopped completely. He opened it, and there was no more noise. We sat there for a few seconds, staring at each other. He shrugged. Then the window slammed shut again without him touching it. We were out of that fucking bathroom in seconds. The noise started up about 10 seconds later, and we tore out of the parking lot. The grinding noise was still there, so this time I pulled over a few miles later at a Flying J truck shop, one that was well lit and occupied. We checked and saw a red and silver piece of a metal wedged underneath. We couldn't remove it by hand, but it was really wedged in there, so we kicked at the metal to bend it, and we figured we'd remove it when we got back. A week later, I had my mechanic take it out when he was doing a service. It was part of a kid's tricycle, the red area where someone can stand. That was one of those moments for me. Totally fucked up and crazy.
Wow, so it was a kid crying. So that's almost a hitchhiker story. It was, I mean, unless he was riding on the back of the car.
The tricycle guy?
Yeah, he had his own wheels, but then it didn't work out.
Oh, no.
So it wasn't Ghost Kid.
Maybe.
Why would else would there be a tricycle in the back of his car?
I don't know.
That's something clearly trying to send him a message.
Yeah.
Like, you know the thing you thought? It was. And that's so sad that the kid is stuck wherever he is and is scared and crying. And
at least they were trying to help.
Right.
They were like, yo, there might be some child traffickers.
Whose mind goes straight there?
Truckers.
My mind wouldn't go there. I'd be like, oh, this kid probably didn't get the Twizzlers he wanted. And now he's throwing a fit.
Two men will do that. You know what? We're heroes. We'll
figure it out.
We're heroes all the time. There must be something going
on. Right.
Yeah.
And now they're all spooked. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to do all the stuff we told you to do. And then follow Nick at Nick Comic. I'm at Edie Gibson Comedy for everything. And now True Scary Stories is on YouTube. So if you have any friends who are idiots and they don't know how to use iTunes, which a lot of us have friends like that.
Or Anchor. Or Spotify,
or whatever you guys listen to us on.
We'll start loading them up.
We start loading stuff up on YouTube now. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. We hope you stay scared uglies.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.